Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 173 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, exciting week. Hit a new all-time high. How is life on your end?
It's been pretty good. I mean, specifically, Bitcoin's been kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, so we got close to touching almost $112,000. So that was pretty exciting. It's dropped down a little bit since then, but it looks like it's in a very good spot at this point.
Yeah, and people still aren't really talking about it, and it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, and it's not taking over any sort of news media or outlets, and it's like the quietest breaking all-time high. It's like, I think psychologically getting over 100,000 was a huge deal, and now anything above 100,000 is kind of the same as 100,000, so it's not, it isn't shocking anybody. So that's part of me, nice chill climb up, you know, that would be fun, but it doesn't have the feel of a wild bull run like Bitcoin usually gives us.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was looking at some of the Bitcoin, I guess from a US Bitcoin ETF perspective, highest weekly inflow this year in 2025, second highest week ever since the inception of it back in February of last year, had about $2.75 billion flow into the US Bitcoin ETFs. I think total crypto was like $3.2 billion for US. So, I mean, it's looking pretty good. Even Ethereum's, they had about $250 million in inflows, which is, I guess, what, a tenth of what Bitcoin did, but it was still one of their highest inflows since like February of this year. So everything looks to be trending upwards right now.
Yeah, that's fine with me. It seems like it's overdue. So fine for people to start catching up.
So let's talk about the Genius Bill. It is theoretically going to have an official vote soon. I guess we talked last week how it kind of got passed and be brought up. There are still apparently a handful of Democrats that really are just fighting this just because they don't want Trump's involvement in crypto. And they're trying to kind of specify something that's already more than what's already in the Constitution. And of course, Trump had his meme coin dinner last week. So right when they had that, the Democrats introduced a bill barring all sitting presidents and close representatives from owning or profiting from crypto, which is kind of funny to me. It's like, what do you own at this point? So apparently presidents aren't allowed to own anything, yet senators can make a shit ton of money from inside trading.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, they actually, you know, have been talking about getting rid of some of this insider trading and putting some laws in place so Congress can't do this anymore, and they'll get up on stage and fight back and say, well, we don't make enough money, you can't have this and that and live in Washington DC, and like they'll defend the fact that they cheat and trade based on information that they have that other people don't. And then on the flip side, they want to pass this stuff. I don't disagree, but I mean, if it's not some inner circle, then they'll just go to another guy. Like you can't fight this stuff, right? Like, so I'm fine with it. Get it passed. But like, put some limits on Congress too.
Yeah. Well, I think there were outside of that dinner, there were about 100 people protesting, which is kind of funny. And the inside perspective, everything that I read, there was really nothing earth shattering that happened. Most people that had bought all that meme coin have either moved it or sold the coins already. So it was a bunch of crypto bros kind of thing is what they said, sitting in a room listening to Trump talk, which was okay, but literally nobody got an autograph, nobody got a picture, nothing. So might have been a little bit of a waste of time for a lot of people, but it is what it is.
No, I feel like 100 protesters is like the minimum number for Donald Trump to do anything. That's a pretty low number. But yeah, I think most people they're so used to Washington scamming money every chance they get. I don't think that really moves the needle. So we'll see. I think it's funny that Trump's doing this crypto dinner get together and all that at the same time that the Bitcoin conference is starting up in Las Vegas. It's like, the whole Bitcoin versus crypto thing, I think Donald Trump's still in the learning mode of like crypto's garbage. So yeah, we'll see how long it takes for him to figure this out.
Oh, it was interesting. We talked about Kevin O'Leary a little bit last week with some of the exchanges that are getting bought. He called out Elizabeth Warren in her position to try to tie the Genius Act to Trump as very un-American, which I thought was interesting because this is something that needs to happen. Although there are a handful of Democrats that are saying, we don't want this to happen because we don't want Trump to make money, which is just, it's just the wrong message. It needs to create some sort of regulation clarity and get this to happen so that everybody can figure out what they can do to move things forward and make the U.S. still be the center of innovation for crypto.
Yeah, I mean, you could tie any piece of legislation into this is going to be good for Trump and justify that to use that to justify not doing anything. I just feel like you got to start getting this legislation passed. You got to start talking about the strategic reserve again, like all the stuff that was supposed to happen. And it needs to happen soon because we're 6 months away from campaign season. So it's got to get on it. And plus you get the August break. So, I mean, we're about to be in June.
Yeah. And I know there's a bunch of banks that are hoping that something like this does happen because JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citibank, Wells Fargo, and a bunch of others, they're talking about doing some sort of shared stablecoin project to compete with Circle and Tether. So they are, of course, waiting for this Genius Act to get passed. But then it's going to be interesting to see who wins out, whether it's kind of the big tech companies or the big banks.
I have that in my list, man. It's super. One, it's nice to see the big banks capitulate a little bit and like, right, look, guys, we gotta do something. Not to mention the fact they can look at what Tether makes on the interest from their short-term bonds, and they've got 60 people making $100 billion a year, some crazy number. Or maybe it's 100 people making $60 billion a year. Either way, there's tons of money in stablecoins and the utilities there and everything else. So I think it's good to see, you know, there's JP Morgan's name again, but also important, we don't hear much about Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citi when it comes to crypto. You know, well, between Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan, it's popped up quite a bit over the last year, you know, 3-4 years, but those other guys haven't really put their name in the news when it comes to this stuff. So that's an interesting point.
So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned strategic Bitcoin reserves, Texas. Get in the news. They passed the bill 101-42 to approve a strategic Bitcoin reserve. It was the third and final time that the bill came up to a vote. So it's interesting that it took three times for that to happen. They are now just waiting on their governor to approve it, but it would make them, I think, officially the number two state to really have a strategic Bitcoin reserve. The other number two state doesn't really have a strategic Bitcoin reserve. It just allows you to hold some Bitcoin in a reserve type thing, but not buy any.
Yeah. And, you know, Texas ought to be out in front, man. They have a way better understanding because of the mining and the power grid stuff that Texas has going for it. Their government has a more friendly relationship with Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. So I would assume this thing's going to get through, but we'll see.
Yeah. It's hard to make assumptions anymore these days, but Michigan also was in the news. They just proposed four new crypto-related bills. One would permit Bitcoin pension investments, I think only using ETFs, not actually buying Bitcoin, but hey, it's a start. Yep. The second one is barring any state CDBC support, which is great to see. And then the third and fourth kind of related to some tax breaks for crypto mining and reusing oil sites that had been like shut down. So yeah, it's exciting to see that other states are starting to look at more than just the reserve piece too.
Yeah, and I think we'll just see more and more of that stuff. You know, there's kind of a copycat system. And once New Hampshire moves forward, it opens the door for everybody else because they don't have to be the first anymore. So I'd imagine over the next 6 months, we see quite a bit of action there.
Yep. So let's talk about companies. And of course, you got to start with strategy. I bought more Bitcoin. So 4,020 Bitcoin about $427 million. They now hold just over 580,000 Bitcoin, worth more than $40 billion. They also announced a $2 billion at the market offering of Strife last week. And I did see Saylor's latest tweet that I only buy Bitcoin with money I can't afford to lose, which continues. He continued to be kind of the head CMO of Bitcoin, I feel like. Just everything he says is so pro-Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when we first started getting into Bitcoin, it was like, just invest what you can afford to lose. Like, if it goes to zero, make sure you're okay. You know, that whole 1% to 2% thing, you know, that was kind of like the go-to mentality. And now everything's flipped. But it was good to see them use Strive and Strike to buy some Bitcoin. You know, that's kind of, I think his goal is to kind of move away from selling common shares and the ATM and using Strive and Strike. And they both reached like $100 a share, which is parity for their 8% and 10% dividends. So that's good to see. But MicroStrategy stock still down in the like high 300s. And I think Saylor said that the way they use the ATM, it shouldn't move the market or doesn't move the market or doesn't affect it much. You know, with all these other Bitcoin treasury companies popping up, I think you just have some people selling some profits from MicroStrategy and placing bets on a handful of other big companies that have come out between the Cantor Fitzgerald, Jack Mallers thing. And, you know, there's a bunch of them now. Metaplanet seems like it's on a rocket, like GameStop style, you know, limit up in Japan every day kind of price action. So I don't know what's going on, but like MicroStrategy definitely feels like a deal since their Bitcoin holdings keep going up, their share price keeps their Bitcoin holding per share keeps going up and their stock price keeps going down.
Yeah, I'm sure the lawsuit doesn't help either.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times. I think that's just for like retail investors that don't understand that this is just a constant cycle of lawsuits that comes through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we talk about Strategy, the other company that we mentioned a lot about is Semler Scientific. So they bought $50 million of Bitcoin, 455 Bitcoin. So they now hold about 4264, which I think it says, I was reading, it cost them about $390 million to acquire. It's worth about $474 million as of now. They've raised $114 million with a goal of $500 million doing at the market offerings. And then now they also have an attorney looking into whether or not they violated securities laws. So kind of what you're just saying, where it's just constant. There's going to be lawsuits. They get one that gets dropped on their plate here now too.
Yeah, doing this kind of stuff, it puts a target on you. And then if there's a lawsuit for MicroStrategy, then everybody gets a lawsuit because they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. I saw that Strive, the Vivek Ramaswamy hedge fund, they're talking about jumping in with a 75,000 Bitcoin acquisition. And they kind of alluded to it being like buying it at a discount. And I'm like, Vivek Ramaswamy is going to leverage his political connections to get the Mt. Gox coins at a discount. Like, that's got to be what that is. Because there's not 75,000 Bitcoin available to be purchased at a discount outside of those.
That's crazy. Trump Media was also in the news. They just came out and they said they're expecting to raise $3 billion to buy more crypto, $2 billion of fresh equity, and $1 billion in convertible bonds, just like Strategy and everybody else has done in the past. So, yeah, we've talked about this before. There's a ton of companies that are kind of coming out of the woodwork trying to become Bitcoin treasury companies. So it's just getting started.
Yeah, and it definitely has the feel of an altcoin, like boom. Like, instead of meme coins, you have Bitcoin treasury companies popping up. So we know how that goes. it's gonna look great for a while, and then something's gonna go wrong. Like, I don't know what's gonna go wrong. I'm not even going to try to guess what's going to go wrong. I just know that, like, yeah, you go ahead and make a little bit of money, but something's going to happen. Like, the first time through does not typically work. So we'll see what that something is.
Yeah. So New York City, their mayor had an interest. We were talking about the Bitcoin conference, right? The mayor had his own crypto summit at his residence last week. He invited a handful of companies to come. He heard from them that if they want New York City to become this crypto capital, that he needs to get rid of this $100,000 bit license requirement. They're apparently in the last 12 years, they've given out 30 of them. They're really difficult to get. Or they need to make New York City into a crypto sanctuary city, which they've done for immigrants and they've done for cannabis. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if all of a sudden any crypto company in New York City is immune from the rest of New York's claws, I could say, I guess.
Yeah, Eric Adams, man, when he was first coming out and he was campaigning and his first three paychecks were in Bitcoin and all that, he was very vocal about it. And then he just completely shut up until it hit like 100,000 and it was back in the news and popular again. So I'm not a big, it just seems like a super political thing for him and not a, you know, if it wasn't for him being in politics, I don't think he'd be in Bitcoin at all. So we'll see what happens if he actually tries to do anything or if he just says it because it's a popular thing to talk about right now. I'm not a big fan.
So we haven't really talked much about the SEC this week, which is kind of nice, but they do have a decision to be made in a couple of days. Grayscale's Cardano ETF deadline is, I think, on Thursday of this week. Polymarket right now has it at a 71% approval. So it'll be intriguing to see if it actually does happen or if it continues to get pushed or even denied at this point. So we'll see with the new SEC head in place if it's really going to be this new regime and very open to other crypto assets out there too.
Yeah, I don't know if that's trading at a premium or a discount, but that was kind of the play for the Bitcoin GBTC because it was selling at a discount. And when it got converted to an ETF, it closed the gap. So that's probably something to look at with a 71% chance of converting.
And then speaking of lawsuits, Coinbase had a class action lawsuit filed by a bunch of investors there. It alleges that the crypto exchange failed to promptly disclose a user data breach earlier this month, as well as a violation of agreement with the UK regulator, I think it was last year. So we'll see what actually happens with this. Kind of what you said earlier, where I think all these companies in general are going to start seeing more and more lawsuits as time goes on now.
Well, Coinbase needs to feel a little more pain for this. It's a real stupid security breach that having like low income employees having access, low income, developing country, you know, these people shouldn't have access to millions of user data and balances and email addresses, home addresses, and pictures of driver's licenses. I mean, that should be really buttoned up stuff. So yeah, that's they need to feel it because like there's a lot of money tied up in this and there's a lot of risk because it's once, you know, if somebody knows how much crypto or Bitcoin you have, they can just assume like, man, this guy's loaded or this girl. So to me, I'm sure Wells Fargo's had something similar. So whatever happened to them ought to probably happen to Coinbase. It's kind of disappointing because you're thinking about Coinbase should be on the edge, leading edge of cybersecurity and prevention and all that. And this seems like a real dumb thing to do.
Yep. No, I agree. Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast. All right, so let's talk about some of the stuff that happened in the world. I was reading you're going to have at Bitcoin 2025 a potential contender for the next UK prime minister talk, Nigel Farage. He's known for being one of the guys that led Brexit. He's built his reputation challenging supranational institutions and unelected power and has been a very outspoken advocate for financial sovereignty and free speech. So, I mean, one, they had Trump do Bitcoin 2024. Now, if Nigel does 2025 and becomes head of the UK, then it's going to be very interesting to see if all these pro crypto people joining or taking over some of the big superpowers around the world.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the Bitcoin conference for things like that. They do a good job of having some big announcement basically every year. The El Salvador announcement, the Trump stuff. It's always good. The funny thing is, historically during the Bitcoin conference, the price drops. And this guy, Dave Weisberger, is on a podcast on Mondays, Macro Mondays, pointed out that typically the buyers of Bitcoin are all at this conference and not trading and buying. But this time they're the sellers and the institutions and corporations are the buyers. So the buy pressure may stay the same or go up and the sell pressure may go down. So I'm always curious, you know, investing, it's always fun to think of like, oh, this time's different. So I'm like, man, this will be interesting to see what happens to the price at the Bitcoin conference. I think everybody's used to it going down, but it would be pretty fascinating if it goes up. I did look at the day one conference schedule. There's some pretty good stuff to watch. They do a good job of streaming it on YouTube, so you can watch it and listen to it during the week as you have time. But there's a lot going on. I feel like this is a well-timed conference. I mean, the week after we break all-time high, within the month of a bunch of Bitcoin treasury companies announcing and going public and ticker symbols just changing for the Nakamoto company, that David Bailey, who's the guy that runs the conference, you know, that ticker symbol just changed over. So they're able to get started and get some investment going. And so this should be a pretty fascinating conference for me. I always enjoy it, but this one's, I think, is going to be good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited. And for those people listening, you can go listen to it for free all you want. Yep. Go stream it. Ireland was in the news here recently too. They just released, Bitcoin Network Ireland, BNI, released what they call a sound punt, a case for Ireland's interest in Bitcoin. What's cool about this is it's kind of the start in helping reshape Ireland's approach to money and economic sovereignty. If you look at Ireland from the past, they were the last European country to adopt coinage back in the day, and they've never had their own currency. So there has been a ton of public discontent in Ireland. They've had some of the largest marches in the streets of Dublin in more than a decade. We've talked about Conor McGregor getting involved in politics. There's just so much stuff that's happening in Ireland, and they're starting to come around to Bitcoin and trying to show to people why Bitcoin would be good. And that's kind of what this whole thing does, is explain the pros and the cons of Bitcoin and why Ireland should be more involved moving forward.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before. Bitcoin's really good at being adopted by people that need it. But if you don't need it, then it doesn't make sense, and it seems stupid and seems like a magic internet money. But if you're having a problem with free speech or freedoms, I mean, Bitcoin kind of ties a lot of self-sovereignty stuff together and accountability and things like that. And so you mentioned the UK. I mean, they're the ones putting people in jail for Facebook posts. Like, people probably start leaning towards Bitcoin and freedom money when to me, going to jail for Facebook posts is on the other side of CBDCs. You should have CBDCs and social credit scores before you have prison time for Facebook posts. So they skipped that whole part. So, you know, having a UK prime minister candidate come to Bitcoin conference makes sense. If Ireland's having these problems, and we don't really talk about Ireland much outside of being a good tax jurisdiction for corporations. So yeah, if they're having trouble, then guess what? People are going to start looking into Bitcoin because they kind of need to. And that's when Bitcoin really gets that adoption curve goes vertical. You know, if you're in Turkey and you have inflation that's tearing your country apart, but if you're in the Ukraine and you've got war and you might need to pick up and leave, and all you need to do is remember 12 words, like, guess what? You're probably going to at least put a little bit in there, and so you can have it as an insurance policy. So yeah, I mean, these countries that are seeing these things, they're going to go to Bitcoin. And just so happens that it's at all time high. It's at $2 trillion. It's, you know, it's way more stable. You got ETFs, you got corporations in, you got the president of the United States. You know, it's a lot safer bet than it used to be.
Yeah, we've even seen, speaking of Europe, Sweden's first publicly listed health technology company adapted Bitcoin as a treasury reserve asset. The company's name is like H100 Group AB, which is weird to me, but it is what it is.
Catchy.
Yeah, they bought 4.39 Bitcoin, and they said this is really just the beginning, but it's a start, right? So $500,000 or so of Bitcoin, and now we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, I've seen a few little company announcements where it's like 5 Bitcoin, 12 Bitcoin, 30 Bitcoin, which to me is like, that's where you start. It's like nobody, the very few people jump in with $500 million and just throw everything into Bitcoin without warming up. So if you look at the way people get into Bitcoin, you and I get into Bitcoin, it's like, you know what, I'm gonna allocate this money that was gonna go to that, I'm gonna move it over here, and you know, it's like if it goes to zero, it's no big deal. And now it's just such a safer asset, and you got so many big names talking about it favorably that you're able to see, you know, way more of the stuff. And this is stuff that hits the news. You know, there's a ton of stuff that's not hitting the news. Private companies don't have to publish any of this stuff.
Yeah. Dubai was also in the news too. Their Dubai land development launches the Middle East's first government-supported blockchain property deed tokenization project. And they're doing it on the XRP ledger, which is interesting. The initiative enabled global fractional ownership and aligns with Dubai's digital transformation push. So now investors can buy fractions of real estate for as little as whatever their currency is, like 2000 AED, which is about just under $550 through one of the minting platforms. And then that makes the Dubai real estate more accessible globally. And if you look at what Dubai thinks from a tokenized property value, they expect it to reach about $16 billion by 2033. Which would still only be about 7% of the total real estate transactions. So we've talked about the RWAs and how big of an opportunity this is. It's interesting that they chose XRP's ledger to do this, but it is still, if it goes to 16 billion, just still a fraction of the total amount of possibility that it can go to in the future.
Yeah, and you know, Dubai, they're a country that, you know, from their tax standpoint, you know, they do a lot of things to attract money, because they converted from basically an oil based country to a tourism based country. Like they seem very progressive and forward looking, so that would make sense that they would kind of be on the leading edge of crypto and Bitcoin's adoption and innovation and things like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see which countries pull ahead. It could be anybody. Like it doesn't take much, and you know, countries that have been kind of just wallowing in whatever middle-class country or developing country world, if they just make a decision like, hey, let's make a bet on this and be a cradle for Bitcoin or crypto, or let's try some things, and they could stand out a little bit, and that'll pay off. I mean, I've never heard more about El Salvador than I do now.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about other countries and making a difference in where they are today. Pakistan is one of those that kind of keeps popping up. They currently have some coal-fired power plants that operate about 15% capacity. So they are planning to start utilizing those to mine Bitcoin and fulfill AI data centers to turn their liability into an asset. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes for them. If they have all this energy, why not turn it into something worthwhile?
Yeah. I mean, and if you, nobody likes burning coal anymore, but if you're producing energy from a coal-fired power plant at 15%, you're so inefficient, and you're creating so many problems for that equipment and for that power plant that it's so much better to run flat out and just go to 100%. You're probably burning not a lot more coal. You're getting more complete combustion. Your off gases, your exhaust gases are better. There's tons of benefits to running flat out. So that's a kind of a no-brainer, even though it's coal, and I'm sure Elizabeth Warren will talk bad about it, but it's the impact environmentally is not great. The impact economically would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. So Hong Kong pretty much beat the U.S. to the punch. They just passed a law to regulate fiat-pegged stablecoins. So no surprise that that happened, I guess, on my end, because we are dragging our feet with this right now for reasons I don't really understand. I mean, I understand, but I don't understand.
Just political junk.
Yep. And I also saw that Australia's one of their senators, who is, I think, one of the leads of one of their parties, just last week called Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme and said it contributes absolutely nothing in terms of real world utility. So once again, we see Australia being very far away from leading in the crypto space. And it seems to be that it wouldn't surprise me if they get left behind with all this moving forward.
Yeah, when I hear that, I'm like, you're probably from a rich family. Like, I don't know this person, but like, if I dug in, I would expect them to not have been bootstrapped themselves up to get themselves into a position of power.
He does have 5 houses, so yeah, that's probably not too far off.
Especially Australian real estate market, that's probably pretty wealthy.
And then this isn't all crypto, but Cambodia kind of popped up in the news. So they have an entire scam industry that they're a big piece of that is worth about $19 billion a year, which is about 60% of their entire GDP. One of the groups that's part of that, Hui Won, processed about $24 billion of money on Telegram, and they even launched their own stablecoin to bypass financial oversight. So, well, from what it sounds like, is Cambodia's ruling elite is very entangled in this scam, and crypto is unfortunately playing a part of it. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward. I know there was a huge arrest by the DOJ from like 10 different countries, and they got $200 million worth of crypto across US, Australia, a bunch of other countries. So it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden you start to see people going after things in Cambodia more now too.
Yeah, if it's 60% of GDP, then the government's all over it. They're not lightly touching it, or a couple people are in it twice. 60% of GDP is an insane percentage for a scam to be part of it. That's wild. And it's wild that this is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. So the other thing that I saw too that was interesting from a worldwide perspective, India's Supreme Court is publicly questioning why their government can't formulate a clear-cut policy on crypto legislation, which is kind of interesting for the Supreme Court to be calling them out in the first place. But there was apparently plans to release this paper talking about the policy stance by September of last year, and yet there's still nothing out. And the excuse that some of the senior officials have given is that there's been a delay due to Trump and the U.S. and their more crypto-friendly policies. So I just laughed and I'm like, God, even other countries are blaming Trump for not doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Everybody else is blaming him. So throw it in there. Sorry, we can't do my job. There's a guy on the other side of the earth that doesn't impact our country. We're a sovereign nation, but we got to wait and see what he does. And they can't get things done.
We don't want to be a leader. We want to be a follower. So now we're going to wait until they decide to do something. It's a horrible plan, but oh well. Crypto startups, we haven't really talked a lot about those here lately, but last week, 6 projects were funded for about they raised about $214 million. If you step back a little bit, PitchBook is kind of projecting about $18 billion to be raised in 2025. Which is more than double what the annual average was for 23 and 24. So we're starting to see a lot more, which is good. I think that'll be a good thing long-term. That being said, it's probably going to take some time for these guys to take off, and hopefully they're not in the gaming space, because apparently all the gaming guys keep stepping back and shutting down.
Yeah, I think it's time in the cycle for us to see a whole bunch of stuff. Like, gaming's got to be one of them. Like, the corporations can't be the story for this cycle. There's a whole altcoin market that isn't making news right now. Like, they're going to start doing things that are going to start at least hitting my radar as far as good ideas. And maybe it doesn't work, but it's like, man, that's an interesting thought. And, Bitcoin treasury company, that's an idea. Now it takes off. Other people copy it. Fine. And on the altcoins, you know, like they got to do better than meme coins, which is like the laziest idea ever of like, let's launch something and see if we can get people to buy it. And then we'll sell our stuff and make money. Like that's not very, there's not a lot of innovation there. So I'm curious to see what we get this cycle. But it's time to start seeing some of that stuff.
Well, we did see Hester over at the SEC come out and say that NFT royalties do not make token securities. So, I mean, that's exciting to see. That means that maybe you can have some use cases open up from that as well, that people start doing more NFTs again.
Yeah, no, and like the use case for NFTs where it's like artists can tag their art with NFTs so that it, as it's sold to the next buyer and the next buyer and the next buyer, they always get a little piece of that transaction. I think that that's great because artists make a nickel when they sell that first piece. And then 20 years from now, if it's worth $6 million and it's sold at auction, they get nothing. And that sucks. Mm-hmm. So there is that use case is neat in my mind for NFTs. You know, playing around with pictures of monkeys and stuff doesn't do it for me, but tagging it to people's art and allowing people to receive royalties over time or their estate to receive royalties over time, I think makes a lot of sense.
So we haven't really talked about Avalanche in a while, but FIFA, which is having the World Cup here in the States next year, has announced that it's working with Avalanche to create their own L1, which will really be powered by Avalanche's subnets. They're planning to port all the existing NFTs they have on Algorand and Polygon over to this as well. So it's interesting that they're leaving Algorand and Polygon and coming to Avalanche trying to control everything on one L1 theoretically. So that'll be interesting to see what happens. This means that when the World Cup is here, they'll be able to handle all of the traffic using Avalanche's subnet. So that will be exciting to see if it does happen or if there is any downtime. It'll be a good test for Avalanche here shortly too.
Yeah, we definitely haven't talked about Avalanche in a long time. It's one of those that I sold and moved on from. So it doesn't pop up on my radar at all. And I mean, yeah, they when they first came out, it looked like they were going to be a player and their market cap put them kind of up into the, I don't know, top 15 so people could see them. And then it's just the crypto winner. Nobody talked about them.
So another thing to talk about is perpetual futures. So the CFTC commissioner had some pretty positive things to say about that. He said that he thinks that crypto perpetual futures can come to market now. We're seeing some applications, and I believe we'll have some of those products trading live very soon. It would be great to get those trading back on shore in the United States. And if you step back, 90% of all the perpetual futures for crypto are the trading is being done outside the U.S. And so this is a multi-trillion dollar market. If we could pull that back into the U.S., that would be amazing and create quite a few opportunities. The big one that's getting a lot of attention right now is Hyperliquid. And they are a perpetual swaps-focused decentralized exchange. It runs on its own layer one, has its own token. It has jumped here recently because they had a guy, James Wynn, which is called Moonpig. His screen name is Moonpig. He put a $1.2 billion 40x long position on Bitcoin here recently, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that did hit my radar. I've never heard of that guy. I've never, you know, I don't pay attention to that stuff, but people are following him pretty close right now.
Yeah. So he closed it for about a $17.5 million loss and opened up $1 billion 40x short position on Bitcoin. So his total profit on Hyperliquid so far is about $40 million. He has 50 million of Bitcoin sitting on there, which is how he's doing the 40x longs. We talked about meme coins earlier. So he had his meme coin. I don't know if he did it or somebody else did, the Moonpig meme coin. It crashed about 30% in the past 24 hours, and it's down 60% from its all-time high. So it peaked at $113 million market cap, which is crazy, right? So, well, meme coins are crazy in general, but.
Well, at least it's a green shoot of a bull market craziness. Like, you know, normally you hear about a lot of stuff going on, and this is like the first one that's really popped up. So, Maybe we're actually starting to get a little hyperbolic.
So the other thing to kind of pay attention to, Sui had one of their DEXs, the Cetus DEX, was exploited for about $220 million. So they're trying to figure out what to do. There's about 160 million sui that were stolen, or sui, however you want to say it. What they're talking about potentially doing is seizing or freezing the funds, using the validators to do this. But if they do this, then all of a sudden this whole credibility of being decentralized comes into question. And I think you're going to have a lot of people be scared to use the entire ecosystem if that does happen. So the problem with the validators is they each have to hold a 30 million sui bond, which is equates to about $114 million. So they're almost kind of at the beck and call of the sui foundation to tell them what to do so they don't lose $114 million. So it'll be something interesting to pay attention to. I don't know which way it's going to go, but it will probably determine the direction of this ecosystem moving forward.
Yeah, everybody's decentralized until they have a problem. And it's like, hey, we gotta go back in time and change these transactions. Like, yeah, that's not how it works.
And another thing I saw that was kind of interesting. So DeLorean Labs, which for those of you that watch Back to the Future, you're probably familiar with the DeLorean. It hasn't really had any vehicles out in like 40 years, right? So they have now launched a online vehicle reservations using the sui NFTs. So their upcoming vehicle is the DeLorean Alpha 5 EV. It's about $2,500 to mint the NFT. And if you don't want to do that, there's also a marketplace to bid on others. So you could theoretically pay less than $2,500, or you could theoretically pay more depending on how excited people are and what they want to do with this. So it's great to see NFTs are being used for this, and I think it makes a lot of sense, but I'm kind of questioning whether DeLorean is really going to come out with an EV.
Yeah, that's stacking probabilities on top of each other. I mean, it's to build cars. It's kind of tough to do. So we'll see what happens.
Not easy, that's for sure. And then, I mean, we haven't really talked about FTX in a while, but they did come back in the news. They are now trying to blame Binance for their bankruptcy. So they're not saying it's an SBF issue. They're suing Binance for pretty much causing all these problems. They're asking for $1.76 billion, which is crazy to me. At the same time, the UK just dismissed a $13.3 billion lawsuit against Binance by the BSV investors, which is Bitcoin Satoshi's Vision. They said that because Binance delisted them in 2019, that's the reason that BSV didn't reach the same levels of what Bitcoin did. So they want a 352x return of the value of BSV. The crazy part is that most people probably didn't realize. Can you tell me who actually created BSV? You're going to know this name and be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Is that right? Is that who it is?
Craig Wright. So he lost everything, saying that he wasn't Satoshi.
Sue his way back into wealth.
So now he's saying that Bitcoin Satoshi's vision is he did this, and it's different than Bitcoin, but no one could really tell you how it's different, and it's gone nowhere because he's not a visionary. So yeah, kind of a mess.
Yeah, I mean, in that fiasco with FTX and Binance, where they got into like a Twitter conversation with Caroline and she exposed their liquidation points and all this other stuff, I'm like, I don't know that that's Binance's fault.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the same thing could be said for like the Silicon Valley Bank crash, when somebody was like, they don't have funds. And then everybody ran through the door or started withdrawing funds digitally and tanked them. So I don't know that that's something that you can get sued for. It's not libel or slander because it's true. It's like, you know, they don't have it. So I'm not so sure it just feels like a nuisance lawsuit, and Binance has money. So they're probably hoping to settle or whatever.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I had, we haven't really talked about the Solana phone here lately, but their Seeker phone, which is, I think, something they put on last year and had a crap ton of pre-orders, it is set to ship in August. So what's interesting for that, they just unveiled a plan for a new SKR token, which will be live on Solana's L1, that will be kind of the ecosystem token for their phones. So I'm not really sure where it's going to go, and it doesn't really have a ton of details yet, but it's interesting that they've almost created a meme coin for their phone.
Oops, we accidentally created a meme coin. That's pretty funny.
So what else did I miss?
Well, I probably should have worked these in. We talked around them, and I just didn't. I'm not a technical analysis guy, but Bitcoin's price did have a golden cross on their 50 and 200-day moving averages, which is always good to see from a price action standpoint. And that kind of ties into like this big, beautiful bill that's getting likely to pass Congress. To me, it's the end of we're going to balance the budget. Doge is going to cut costs. We're going to lower interest rates and refinance the debt. To me, it's all right, business as usual. We're going to overspend. We're going to be in a deficit. We're going to buy our own treasuries and print a bunch of money. The only, you know, they stopped talking about all of this hard work, and now Bessent has already been talking about they're going to grow their way out of the debt with it, you know, with explosive economy. And I think that that's made easier by allowing some inflation and debasing the currency to make the $37 trillion look a lot smaller because the dollar's devalued. So good for Bitcoin. And, you know, I feel like you're going to squeeze a lot of people with more inflation, but they've got so many daggum games to play that maybe they can make some improvement, but it just feels like, well, we got elected on, we tried and we failed. So now we're going to go back to doing everything just like everybody else was doing.
Well, I forget who pretty much said it, but at some point you're going to have one of these major countries that just prints a shit ton of money, buys a bunch of Bitcoin until Bitcoin grows so fast that you can't really buy Bitcoin with fiat anymore, and they'll just switch over, right? And at this point, it's almost that's the path you're going to have to go, because as much as everybody's fighting Doge, they don't want to cut costs. they don't want to believe that there's corruption and fraud out there. So if that's the case, let's just be the first one to turn our money into oblivion and have something else to fall back on when it goes to nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and we're way past due to, you know, step one. How much Bitcoin is held by different departments? And we're 6 weeks past when that was supposed to be reported on. So who knows, man? Maybe they're buying Bitcoin in the background and they don't want to talk about it so that people can't front run them. But it feels like they're just doing what the U.S. government always does, which is whatever is easiest. That's it.
They're probably filling it. Put the Bitcoin in Fort Knox.
That's right. It's an empty warehouse anyway. They got plenty of room for Bitcoin. Awesome. Yeah, well, that's it. That's it for me.
Yeah, another interesting week for sure. Things aren't slowing down. It's going to be intriguing to see what happens in the next week too.
I agree. I think the next week will be something's going to happen at the Bitcoin conference. That's going to be good to hear. It's just they're going to say something fun, and they've got a lot of pretty big people, and there's a lot going on. I mean, you know. These kind of conferences do attract like the big corporations and things like that. So it's not just like retail guys doing, you know, explaining how to self-custody anymore. It's like what kind of major strategies are being conducted by big players. So it's pretty interesting to see, I mean, how far the Bitcoin conference has gone in 6 years.
Yep. No, should be interesting. So I'm going to rely on you to give me a download of everything that you watch.
I'll try.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Al. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.